We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast, and this is the State of Play podcast that Norman Riley and I do monthly for our patrons every single month. If you like what we do, if you like what we hear and you want to listen to April's version, come and join us, £8 a month. And there's a link in the description to this podcast. Norman, it's absolutely brilliant to be talking to you, particularly after Newcastle United beat Wolves 3-0 and they go to an eminently beatable Chelsea on Monday night. When we were talking about this podcast a couple of weeks ago and after that Arsenal game, we're thinking, bloody hell, how hard are we going to have to go in them here? But fear not, Eddie Howe had the answers. Newcastle United had the answers. How are you feeling about it all now, mate? Now we'll put the mighty Wolves to the sword.
I mean, there's a slight tinge of sarcasm when you say the mighty Wolves there, but ultimately their form going into the match with us was excellent. They had some fantastic away wins. They were really looking like they might be potential rivals for us for it, or even a top 10 finish, given how poor those performances against Blackburn and Arsenal had been. I was seriously worried we'd drop out the top 10. You also had kind of a resurgent Chelsea pre-League Cup final. They had a game in hand, maybe two games in hand, and if they'd got the points out of those games, then they would have overtaken the table. I was deeply concerned at the season almost petering out. You know, the focus perhaps being on the FA Cup, and then obviously the league form tailing off. But one win, mate, and all of a sudden, I'm looking at the rest of those fixtures and thinking, dear God, why can't we not hit top five? Six is now a reasonable ambition, given, obviously, the high likelihood we're not going to have any FA Cup semi-final to focus on because of the shocking draw. The draws we've had this season, mate, honestly, I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but I swear to God, there's something not right here. But after that Wolves game, after the... just how good the performance was in really kind of dismantling, as I say, a side in good form, a side who I thought might cause us serious problems, has given me a real load of confidence to look forward to the rest of the season and end the season, not only finishing sort of top six, but also in really good form that we can perhaps carry over into next season. Wow, what a time to be alive, mate. You're looking at a complete 360 degree turn based on one result. Ridiculous.
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk about, mate. That's the first point I think I sent you. And I have to just, before we kind of talk about that and the impact of the result against Wolves and why it has had such an impact psychologically, I feel, on the fan base, I do have to just give everyone listening a little bit of hope and you a little bit of hope, Norman, because if this version of Newcastle United can't go to Manchester City and win, explain to me how I could be stood in a Manchester City Wetherspoons in 2014, when the team sheet comes out and who's in central midfield? It's Ryan Taylor, it's Mehdi Abid, and we'll fucking beat them 2-0. So if that team can go with Gabby Obertan, Rolando Ahrens, and God knows who else, and turn over the reigning champions at the time with Aguero, Toure, Silva, company, these lads can go win at Manchester City, mate. I don't know whether that makes you want to book a hotel for Wembley or not, but I feel like I've done my bit for the rest of the season by just reminding everyone that the impossible is possible.
Mate, the impossible is possible. And if the impossible is possible, does that mean there's no such thing as the impossible? Is that what we're saying now? We're getting into philosophy, aren't we?
You said it, not me.
Look, the reality is, right, we play that game against Man City at that stadium, 30 times. We're probably going to lose 28 times, maybe get a draw, maybe get one win. That would only happen if they played like literally the 30 games off the spin, you know, and kept the same players on the pitch. So exhaustion had set in by the end. But of course, Of course, on the day before, I will be thinking, of course we can beat them. Of course we can beat them. But right now, sat in my living room on a cool Saturday morning, thinking about how good Manchester City are at the minute, and thinking about, obviously, the fact that we always seem to lose them again there, other than, you know, as you say, the game that you referenced in 2014, that spectacular performance. The likelihood is we'll lose, and as much as I'd like to get the Cup semi-final, losing to them, because of that win against Wolves, because of how tight it is between sort of, what, sixth and 10th, we lose that game, we still have a season to play for, we still have something to play for, so ultimately, that defeat against Man City, if it happens, won't feel like the end of the world. It'll be really disappointing, upsetting. I'll be optimistic on the day. I'll be devastated when we lose. But at the same time, again, the game against Wolves has almost changed the dynamic of the season for me. And as I say, just one game doing that to you kind of highlights the ridiculousness of being a football fan.
Yeah. Let's talk about this this one result against Wolves, because you just referenced it, mate. It does feel a little bit different. To particular, I want to bring in the two results against Fulham. 3-0 at home, 2-0 away in the Cup, and you could argue it's the Cup, but let's just leave that for a second. And the Forest win, I feel like everyone has just kind of, there's been a collective sigh of relief and almost a shift to looking ahead to the rest of the season, not just because of the Cup game, but the league season in particular. You referenced their top six. I think we're going to talk end of the show, mate, about, you know, what the rest of the season might bring. So I'll leave that for now. But what do you think it was about this victory that's just collectively calmed the whole place, journalists, fans, even players and Eddie Howe? Is it the comprehensiveness of the win? Was it the fact that Wolves were kind of the away form Premier League side coming into this fixture with some remarkable results away from home? Or was it a little bit more than that? What do you think it was about this game and this result that's really kind of almost put a new complexion on the rest of the season?
I think first and foremost, relief, because out of the Newcastle fans that I'm mates with, that I'd spoken to, I think every one of them was a little bit concerned that this game might end up in a Wolves win or a draw. And a draw wouldn't have necessarily been a good result. I don't think a draw would have lifted the spirits quite like this has. I don't even think a sort of undeserved 2-1 win or a 1-0 win with a penalty being the goal would have lifted the spirits. I think that would have made people think, yeah, that was lucky, that was really lucky. But this wasn't. This was Newcastle United sort of circa 2022-2023. And the performance actually was reminiscent of many of those performances where we knew that the team we're playing was going to have quite a lot of possession. We knew that they could possibly outplay with, but we kind of allowed them to play a little bit of their game without allowing them to do it too much, and we controlled it. And not only that, we kept a clean sheet and we were clinical. So these little details were really important, I think, in lifting my confidence personally. Yes, Wolves did have a couple of chances. They did. Dubravka pulled off some good saves, but I never felt threatened by them. And it's the first time in a while where we've played an opposition and I've never felt necessarily threatened. It was one of those where after sort of 10, 15 minutes, I just felt, oh, you know what? Things seem to be clicking into gear here today. And I think obviously for me, again, one of the big pluses and one of the reasons that I am looking forward to between now and the end of the season is the return of Joe Willock, mate. I think we've mentioned this on the podcast on numerous occasions, but his importance to how Newcastle United play under Eddie Howe, whether that's Newcastle United 2022-23 or 23-24, is huge. And it's just so good to see him back in the team. And I think he lifts that midfield. He lifts that midfield in a massive way. And obviously, Willock being in the team, it allows Bruno to be an even better player than what he has been whilst he's been in the midfield with the inexperienced Lewis Miley and the massively out-of-form Sean Longstaff. So those for me are the positives. The control over the game, the discipline, the fact that we allowed them a bit of the ball, but we never looked like losing to them, the clean sheet, and just the return of Joe Willock. All of these little factors have suggested to me that this between now and the end of the season could be really, really interesting and exciting.
Yeah, the great points, mate. And I think that Joe Willock one's the big one, isn't it? Because all of a sudden, even going into that fixture, you know, lots of people are discussing or even obsessing about who plays left-back for Newcastle. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot on this podcast. People, I'm sure, listening and watching have talked about it, thought about it lots. And it almost just, for that fixture anyway, that just wasn't an issue for that game. And it might have been because of the way the game went. It might have been because Wolves didn't play. I thought they played all right, but, you know, maybe they wasn't their best version of themselves. But ultimately, Byrne came up against one of the league's in-form right-wingers and kind of managed him pretty comfortably. And I think Joe Willock is a big part of that. But also, there was, I'll give you my theory, Norman. There's always comfort in what you know. And we know that Newcastle performance because we've seen it before. And I take you back to Newcastle's remarkable 2022 from kind of February to the end of the season when Eddie Howe achieves the miracle of being bottom at Christmas or whatever it was, bottom after so many games, no wins after 14 games, and not just keeps us up. 17th would have been miraculous, but to get us into 11th place as the third best side after that January of that season. And I've got a stat for you, Norman, mate. Every single home league win under Howe that season, Newcastle had less of the ball than their opponent. That includes Burnley, Sean Dyche's Burnley. There wouldn't be many games Sean Dyche's Burnley went away from home and had more of the ball than their opponent. That includes Frank Lampard's Everton, had nearly 70% possession in that fixture in the 3-1 win. Aston Villa, Brighton had over 70% of the ball when they came to St James's Park. Wolves, Leicester had way more of the ball. Crystal Palace had 65% of the ball when they came to St James's Park. And then funnily enough, we actually had 50.1% possession against Arsenal. We beat them 2-0 in that game. And I'm referencing these fixtures, and it was a long time ago, but I just feel like how, and I've got some questions about how for you coming up, mate, but I just feel like I would call it going back to basics, and there were a number of solutions to Newcastle's problems that came out of this fixture, which I think answers the question why people have been calmed by it so much. Even though it's one game, they have to follow it up at Chelsea, then they have to follow it up against West Ham and Everton. But ultimately, the gap between the back four and the goalkeeper was far reduced because Newcastle sat deeper. The gap between, I mean, gap is too light a word for the space that existed between Newcastle's defence and midfield in recent months. That was much reduced. And as a result, you saw a classic Newcastle United performance where the opposition fails to create a single big chance in the fixture. And if your opposition fails to create a single big chance in the fixture, you're going to win a lot of games. And you're certainly not going to lose them, particularly with the attacking quality Newcastle have with the Gomarez, with the Joe Willock, like you say, with the lads who play in the front three, in particular Anthony Gordon and Alexander Isak. So I just, when I went back and looked at those stats, I found it really interesting that I think what we saw was Howe going back to what he had, the success that he initially had at Newcastle United was built on what they would call a transitional game, what I would call a counter-attacking game. And all Newcastle's goals are scored in the counter-attack ultimately. But yeah, I mean, there's comfort in that. There are probably questions that we can talk about later on about what that means about the direction of the side and if this is permanent, if this is temporary, if this is a Nick Pope thing. But first of all, before I have my further questions for you, mate, do you agree with that? Do you think that this was simply Howe saying after Arsenal, after when Blackburn was a little bit different, but after Arsenal in particular, or even before that, after, you know, even against Nottingham Forest, Newcastle win the game, but they're a questionable penalty decision away from defeat. Possibly they do very well to win the game, but Forest still have a huge number of big chances in the fixture. Do you think that this is how just thought, fuck it, like, let's just go back to what used to work with this goalkeeper, because Martin Dubravka was the goalkeeper in 2022. Am I giving credit where it's not due based on just one result against one team who didn't play great on the day?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
No, I mean, I agree. And in the notes that I wrote before this podcast, the big word in capital letters, was Pope / Dubravka. So moving back to that 2022-23 model does make a huge amount of sense, because that system worked with Martin Dubravka in goal. Dubravka was actually sensational that 2022-23 season, when we were obviously under the cosh in certain games. You know, there's no doubt in Martin Dubravka's shot stopping. He is a very, very good shot stopper. He's quite good at controlling the sort of, I would say, up to the penalty spot, maybe, in terms of the goal area. But obviously, how he plays the game, his distribution, his ability to play 35 yards out is nothing like that of Nick Pope. And it just is taken, it seems, a long time for us to actually not necessarily realise that, but again, you know what, we're never going to be able to play how we wanted to play, how we want to play 2023-24 style. Sorry, I'm getting my season mixed up, Piana. 2021-22 was the season, yes, where we stayed up. 22-23 is a very... Yeah. Apologies, listeners, for that. I'm getting my seasons all mixed up. But yeah, we've defaulted back to the 21-22 template. And I think the reality is that now we cannot play how we played last season without Nick Pope in goal. It's as simple as that. They're too different. The goalkeepers are too different to play that particular style we want. So moving back to this world we play makes perfect sense. And I'm really glad you referenced those results against particularly Aston Villa and Everton 21-22, because those games, I think we messaged each other in the day. I was at the Everton match with you, wasn't I? And
yeah,
while I had all the ball, we controlled the game. We controlled the game, and it felt very much like that against Wolves. And of course, it's really, like, you know, you could argue ridiculous for me to read so much into one game, but I do genuinely hope that as long as Dubravka's in the sticks, that we stick to this particular style of play, because I think it is more effective. I just don't think we can play that game that we want to play when Nick Pope's in goal with Dubravka. Not denigrating Dubravka's capacities as a goalkeeper. As I say, he's brilliant for what he does, but what he lacks that Pope has completely changes how we can play. So I'd be personally delighted if we continue playing like this. And I think actually, if we head to Chelsea and play in this particular way, given that Chelsea do tend to dominate the ball and are just absolutely terrible in front of goal, basically, then I think we'll come away with a win. So completely back in, and I hope it is this sort of tactical shift.
Do you think, mate, if you'll allow me to be hypercritical for a second, or at least pose a hypercritical question, Newcastle go to Liverpool, play a disastrous high line, or relentlessly beaten in behind, relentlessly play the ball out from the back, relentlessly lose the ball in their own final third, which results in chances for Liverpool, and there have been so many fixtures since then. What do you think it is about how that's taken him the time, assuming that this is the answer, that he has found the answer? What do you think, basically my question is, why not earlier? Why not as soon as Dubravka came in? Why not when Dubravka comes in against Everton and Spurs and we concede 7, which is even at the time the most un-Newcastle United thing possible? Why has it taken how so long to address this, mate? Do you think Joe Willock was the missing part? Do you think, in fact, I'll extend the question to you, what we saw against Arsenal, and I'm not sure, I didn't do the podcast afterwards, but I was very much thinking, what were they even trying to do against Arsenal? Now I think they were trying to do what they did against Wolves, but it just was terrible and didn't work. Do you think it's not just the Martin Dubravka thing? Do you think to play a transitional game, you need the physicality and quality and pace of a Joe Willock? Or, again, should Howe have just changed things sooner?
It's a really awful question to ask, admit, because I really hate criticising Eddie Howe, because I know literally nothing about football compared to him. However, in my capacity as a thick as mince football fan from Gateshead, what I will say is that obviously we had so much success last season playing this, what we call attacking football, this front foot football, pressing football, and we started the season in that way. We didn't have a bad start of the season, you know. We beat Man United with Nick Pope in goal. We're fifth in the league, I think, at that point. You know, we're looking up, right? And all of a sudden, overnight, this massive injury happens to Pope and Dubravka comes in. And, you know, really, Howe's only seen Dubravka in a team that was, when he took over, struggling. And Dubravka ends up playing a really important part of him staying up. Some fantastic performances from him. And perhaps the belief was there that we could play the same system with Dubravka. Perhaps Howe has seen something in Dubravka in the 2 years that he's coached him that suggested to him, actually, the way that we play with Nick Pope and goal can be the way that we play with Dubravka. He does have this capacity. He can learn on the job to a certain extent. And obviously that hasn't been the case. And I don't know why it's taken a long time for to maybe move back to this particular style. Pride, perhaps. I mean, obviously, you know, we finished in the top four of the Premier League last season. All of a sudden, we're in the Champions League playing against giants like Dortmund, PSG. And, you know, the fact is that we to a certain extent, as a fan base even, I mean, on a personal level, I believe what Owen hyped, right? At the start of the season, I was like, you know what? Last season, we've almost conquered all based on a squad that was fighting relegation the season before. We've sprinkled it with some more stardust. We're going to be challenging for the title. So, you know, that pride and that, I suppose, that misplaced belief, like maybe that doesn't, in a way, kind of translate into the team. Like, you kind of think that, well, we did this last season. We're really good at it. Why can we not do it this season? And it just takes a while to come to that realization that actually that's not necessarily the case anymore, because that particular style of play is ultimately relying on a couple of personnel. Again, I mean, that might just be one of the worst theories ever, but hey, I'm running with it, mate, so comment on it, please.
No, I agree with you, and to be fair, I've probably misrepresented a little bit how Newcastle have played since the turn of the year, at least. I mean, in preparation for this podcast, I went and watched all of Newcastle's short highlights kind of since that Forest game, and you look at the goals at home to Forest and Luton in particular, and it's very much a case of how should have changed it earlier. But like you correctly say, mate, what are gobshites like me and you going to be doing if Newcastle go and play a counter-attacking game against Luton and Forest at home? Like, people, particularly if it doesn't go well, because we can't just assume, all right, we're going to play a counter-attacking game, we're going to sit deep, there's going to be very little space between the midfield and defence. If it doesn't work, and that's what, you know, what I'm also going to explore, if can this work against an Everton at home, a terrible Thorndyke Everton at home, and Sheffield United at home later in the season. But I think you hit the nail on the head that pride and acceptance of where Newcastle are as fans has taken a little bit longer, certainly has me. But like you say, possibly within the club, if intensity is your identity and you're fucking writing it on walls and shit, it's probably quite a big climb down to be like, right, lads, for Wolves, forget about the intensity, I want you to sit deep, play on the counter-attack, and we're still going to be intense in our actions and we're still going to battle, but basically I don't want you to close down the ball when it's more than 40 yards from the goal, and if Wolves want to play through as they can, but it's going to create counter-attack opportunities. It probably does take a little bit to swallow that and accept that and change your training methods, but ultimately, you know, Newcastle play a counter-attacking game at Aston Villa, and it works incredibly well. Newcastle played a counter-attacking game against Manchester City and it almost bought them at least 1 point in the game. So maybe I'm a little bit harsh saying how should have changed it sooner in the fixtures in particular. I think the Bournemouth game is probably the one where I think he could have changed it a game earlier, because in particular with the Dan Byrne question, I thought Dan Byrne was way better as well, mate, because he was just kind of able to play as a left-back against Wolves. There wasn't the three at the back shift, Kieran Trippier pushing up into midfield. Trippier spent a lot more time against Wolves playing just as a right back rather than as a right wing back or on the right of midfield, essentially. And it has brought Trippier and Newcastle a lot of joy, not just results last season and part of this season, but the number of assists for Trippier and key passes for Trippier. But ultimately, I thought it just looked way more balanced. It just looked, everyone knew their role. We weren't kind of trying to play a very, very specific system. And it just looked like a proper performance and a proper team. And like I said earlier in the show, the fact that Newcastle have won the game so convincingly, but not just won the game, the fact that it looks like us in that teams have come to St James's Park for so long under Howe, apart from maybe Arsenal and Liverpool, and just found it impossible to create chances and impossible to get in behind, all of a sudden we saw that again, and it's only been one game, but it just felt right. It felt comforting because Wolves have turned up, and regardless of what Gary O'Neill says after the game, they've been turned over relatively easily 3-0, and I wouldn't say Newcastle didn't break a sweat. They did, but the game plan worked. The game plan worked perfectly. Over to you, pal.
Spot on, mate. Gary O'Neill's pat at the end of the match was absolutely hoofing, but you know what? He's entitled to do that. He's done a great job there, and he was just a little bit upset because he went there, and guess what? He thought they were going to win. It's as simple as that. It was a bit of a lesson for them, I thought. And just moving on to the intensities of identity aspect, the thing is, I think it's this idea of what intensity means, right? So last season, intensity was the constant high pressing, right? The you know, the boxing teams into a very sort of small area of the pitch, right? Being on top of them all the time and playing this sort of fast flowing football. But actually, the season before, the relegation battle season, that actually ended up not being a relegation battle at all. Actually, the miracle of Burn, brackets L-E-Y, was the kind of catalyst for it. But there was an intensity then, even though we were sitting back. The intensity was in the hype of self-discipline of the players, right? The intensity was in the snap and tackles. The intensity was in the shithousery. It was just a different kind of intensity. And rolling it back to that, it's not like by going back to how we did play against, right, like, you know, in 21-22 against Wolves, is losing that identity. It's almost like, hold on, we've got, you know, I mean, I think multiple identities have got like negative connotations, multiple identities in an individual. But as a football club, I think to say that we have this intensity is our identity, but it's just a different kind of intensity depending on the opponent that we're playing, dependent on the players that we've got available. And against Wolves, I did see what I would call intensity. I saw the intensity in that hyper focus, that determination to win. And even though we ceded territory and possession, we didn't really cede any chances. And we hit them by being clinical. And clinical, again, is part of that intensity, right? It's that hyper focus and discipline. So I'm really delighted to see it back. And I'm happy if we play it between now and the rest of the season until Pope comes back, obviously, and then things maybe change at that point.
We'll be really interested when it won't Pope, because if this does work, and Pope's initial return date was March, but as we know, with Howe in particular, and the kind of deliberate misdirection, that's what I like to say rather than lying, deliberate misdirection for the benefit of the team and the club, it could be fucking September by the time he's back. But let's just assume he's back at least in April. It is going to be really interesting, mate, because, you know, allow me to dream and say we'll go and turn over Chelsea and then we'll do West Ham and Everton at home and Fulham away, who knows? And then Pope comes back. If you're kind of coming off four or five, if not wins, good performances, strong performance, more balanced performances, he will bring Pope back. But then do you then have to pivot back to what worked before after everything's working so well? But ultimately, like you say, mate, when Pope got injured against Manchester United at home, which was the start of December, we were fifth in the league. So if you're going back to that version of Newcastle, well, it's better than this one, because we ain't going to be fifth when, regardless of the results, when Pope comes back. So it'll be really interesting. And I think this is the thing about Pope. There was some discussion earlier in the season about Pope. His form is off. He had a poor game at Brighton away. He still remains one of the greatest ever signings, in my opinion, for such little money when goalkeepers cost as much as they do to be able to do what he does. Is he the best passer of a football? No, but in terms of essentially allowing your team to play 20 yards further up the pitch, maybe that's an exaggeration, but certainly higher up the pitch, and therefore be able to control the game and win midfield battles and step up in the midfield and press higher, it's a remarkable talent and ability that he has that I think a lot of Newcastle fans are possibly guilty of not realising, because ever since he's come into the team and signed, he's been an ever-present, apart from obviously famously at the cup final last season. But yeah, interesting nonetheless to see what happens. And of course, we're recording this podcast. If Newcastle go and play like this and get turned over 2-0 by an average Chelsea, fucking tear it all up, burn it down, start again anyhow. That's the way football works. Norman, over to you.
Just quickly, mate, can I add to that? Sorry. It's a really interesting scenario you painted there, potential scenario in that if we do, let's say, come out of the next four fixtures with 8 points, you know, 10 points, 12 points in a dream world, right? And you said, let me dream, so I'm letting you dream, mate. We'll both dream together, 12 points, read. But ultimately, playing the way that we did against Wolves, obviously, the question then is okay, Pope does come back in, because I think, you know, for everything you've just underlined there, do we switch to the system that we are used to under Pope, even though we've won like five games off the spin, or, you know, we've come up with like 12 points from five games or whatever it is, or do we kind of stick to what we know? And in that case, you're asking yourself, well, is Pope the right decision to make if we're sticking to that system that's worked whilst Dubravka's been in goal quite recently? I would still argue it is, because ultimately, I think the difference between Pope and Dubravka is that, you know, Pope is capable of playing the game that Dubravka plays as well as the game that he played under Newcastle last season. You know, Pope was at Burnley for years, and that didn't involve high pressing, controlling 35 yards outside of the goal, right? So I think, you know, you could almost think, oh, well, Pope will instinctively be the goalkeeper that he was last season. But actually, I don't think it's that. If Howe has set up the team to play in this particular way, this kind of 2021-22 style, and it's having success, and Pope comes back in the team and Howe wants to stick to that system, Pope is capable, I think, of transitioning to that game quite easily, because he is ultimately a very, very good goalkeeper. And I don't think it's any exaggeration to say, based on his form at Newcastle, he's one of the top goalkeepers in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, the stats would back you up, mate, in that. So fair enough. Interestingly enough, mate, let's talk about the rest of the season and how this plays out. And we've kind of, I think, both agreed that Howe has found a formula that works very well for the players he has anyway right now at his disposal. Newcastle, what are they? They currently have played, let me look at the league table. Newcastle currently played 27 games. They have 40 points. And, you know, even this result against Wolves, there has been at least some conversation online. Can Newcastle United do the impossible and sneak potentially six? I don't think that's impossible. Only 4 points ahead of Man United, and they're a little bit dog shit, let's face it. Minus two goal difference, wow, for the sixth place team. Spurs are 10 points ahead, though they have a game in hand. They'll have to come to St James's Park. They're also a little bit indifferent in terms of their form and have been for a while. Villa seem 15 points ahead, just seems way too many points, particularly that win for them at Luton, I think has kind of put them out of Newcastle United's range. Newcastle are eighth at the minute. And in terms of being able to catch, or at least contest those positions, pal, I'll put something that I find relatively interesting. At this stage last season, pal, and people might not like this because I'm looking at Liverpool, and Liverpool have proven this season that they're a very, very good side. And they might win the league this season, but we finished above them last season. And when I look at what Liverpool were doing at this stage last season, there are a lot of Liverpool fans feel like if the season had been a couple of games longer, they'd have caught Newcastle, because Newcastle went only one of the last five fixtures. Liverpool, apart from the final two games when they can't qualify the Champions League, won an incredible number of games in a row. Liverpool won 42 points at the same stage last season. Newcastle are on 40. Which is pretty interesting to me. And I'm sure Liverpool would have looked at a lot of games played and think, oh, if we'd won this, if we hadn't drawn this, if we'd done this. But if Newcastle don't, you know, if Martin Dubravka doesn't fall over against Bournemouth, or if Jacob Murphy knocks the one at the back post against Luton to go 5-4 up, well, maybe Newcastle don't find the solutions they found against Wolves, but we'll ignore that. It does just feel like, considering the fixtures we've got, pal, I'm not making the case that it will happen, but I'm saying Newcastle, if the solutions have been found, are in a great position to try and put some real pressure, particularly on fifth place. And maybe that sounds ridiculous because, again, we've won one game against Wolves at home. But after everything we've just said, I kindly get the sense from you, pal, that you are starting to believe that good result on Monday night, and then it's two very winnable home games, despite West Ham's lofty league position, their form is very bad. What do you think in the rest of the season, mate? What's possible, what's not?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, before I get into that hyperbolic madness that I'm about to get into, what I will say is that any Liverpool fan saying that if the season had gone up by two or three more games, it would have caught with, what a ridiculous thing to say, because ultimately the reason that they won all those games off the spin is because they literally had no to play for. They had no hope that they were going to get in the top four and the player with the freedom that allowed them to get those wins. And also, we only won one of our last five games. That four-game spell before we beat Burnley away was it Burnley away? No, it wasn't Burnley away. Last game of the season, remind me, mate?
We drew at Chelsea Brighton last game. Brighton at home won.
So the reason that we kind of maybe wobbled, obviously, I'm thinking of the draw against Leicester, for example, is because of the pressure. So I'm not having that from anyone. And so if there's any Liverpool fans listening with that opinion, have a word. But in terms of the rest of the season, mate, every single one of those games is winnable. Every one of them. Like, if we had Liverpool or Man City thrown in there or Arsenal, I'd be like, no, every one of them isn't winnable. You know, if it was away against these teams, for example. But there are. Now, when I didn't believe for 1 second we're going to win 11 games off the spin. I genuinely don't believe that. But when I look at those fixtures, do I see 7 wins out of 11 as a possibility? Aye. Do I see a couple of draws sprinkle in there? Aye. What does that bring with? That brings with 23 points. It takes one to 63, which is one more point than Brighton got last season when they finished in sixth. So that would be a sixth place finish. I think really you need to be looking at 68 perhaps points to get to that fifth place, 67, 68 points. Now, is it possible? Aye, it is possible, but I do think that I'm trying to rein myself in a little bit. That to me right now doesn't seem feasible. I can't see we're winning the probably 8 games, 9 games maybe, that would need to get into that fifth place position. I didn't see Spurs collapsing spectacularly enough for them to not get at least 14 points between now and the end of the season. I see Man United picking up more points, as much as I think they're terrible and Ten Hag's a dead man walking. They do seem to have this capacity to win games, so they'll be a bit of a challenge. However, do I see us potentially winning 7 games, drawing a couple? Aye, I do, and that means 6th place. And I think given where we were 2 weeks ago, mate, given where we were in the immediate aftermath of the Blackburn game, finishing 6th would be a great achievement. It would get win Europe. It would also, as I've said before, take it into pre-season or take it into next season in fantastic form, finishing the season fantastically. And that is so important psychologically for the start of the next season, going into the summer with that real sort of feel-good factor engendered. So I am hopeful, but at the same time, I do think 6th is probably the highest we'll get this season.
I think 6th would be a remarkable achievement considering the what they've had to deal with, what we've had to deal with, supporters, in terms of the injuries, the fixture congestion, the cup draws. You know, at least 2 cup quarterfinals in the 6th place for any version of Newcastle United, but particularly this version of Newcastle United, cannot be seen as anything but a solid, decent season. Add into that all of the things I've just referenced, and it's almost a remarkable season. I think Spurs are the one, and you've got to have dreams, okay? And yes, Spurs are 10 points ahead of us. Listen, before Norman and I are recording this on Saturday morning, and we go to Chelsea Monday night, and we also then will know the result of Aston Villa v Tottenham tomorrow. But Spurs' fixtures, mate, Spurs have got Tottenham, they've got Villa away. That's followed up by Fulham away, which is not easy. We also have to go to Fulham. They have got West Ham away, who are not in great form, but still a top side in terms of the Premier League table in 7th place. And it's a derby and they don't like each other. And that is a tough game. They have got Newcastle away, which will hopefully be a very tough game. Counter-attack the fuck out of them, as is our want currently as a side after one game playing like that. They then have Man City at home. They have Arsenal at home. They have Liverpool away. Some hard games compared to what Newcastle have got. And I suppose if there's any sort of wobble or collapse there, those fixtures will be a massive problem for them. So, you know, if Newcastle can be almost perfect, if Newcastle could pick up to kind of 25 to 27 points out of those last 11 games, big ask. But when we look through the fixtures, you know, Everton at home, Sheffield United at home, Brighton at home, Brentford away, but Burnley away, you know, there's points there, Chelsea away. There's points to be had. And the other fixtures aren't the hardest. The ones I haven't referenced aren't the hardest either. Palace away, Man United away, Fulham away, you know, West Ham at home. There's points on offer for Newcastle. And I actually think you've nailed it that Liverpool were able to do what they did last season because of the lack of pressure and expectation on their season, because they were able to eventually get players back from injury and they were able to just play and get on a bit of momentum. And yeah, they didn't make the Champions League, but God, they felt the benefit this season. They bounced into this season after the end of last season. And if Newcastle can do something similar, whether it's 5th or 7th or 6th, that's the important thing. Because if you can head into next season with solutions to your problems, with players back, with a feel-good feeling, with goals scored, clean sheets kept, with a good transfer window in the summer, a better transfer window than the last two we've had, that's for sure. That's what we need. There's no reason why Newcastle can't really look ahead to next season and look at particularly at Spurs and Villa and think, we're going to be clear of you next season. We're going to be better than you because, yeah, Liverpool, Arsenal and Man City are comfortably clear at the minute. But that fourth place spot that we had last season is still well and truly up for grabs. We beat Villa twice. They're a flawed side. They're not perfect. They're a good side. They're a decent side, but they're not insurmountable. Spurs have got all sorts of problems. I feel like they've been tremendously lucky based on their XG to be where they are this season. And let's see how the rest of the season goes. Maybe Spurs will find the solutions to that. Maybe they'll be the ones that fly in and look to catch Villa. So really interesting, mate. Can't wait for it, really. Just that one result, I suppose, which is the whole purpose of this podcast, that one result has really kind of put the fire in everyone. And we now need to go and back that up at Chelsea. Because if we lose or we draw, I mean, a draw's not a bad result away from Chelsea, but Chelsea are a little bit rubbish. And he's in a massive pressure, Pochettino. We've got to be able to try and exploit that and go and get a rare Premier League away victory at Stamford Bridge. The rest of the season could be very exciting indeed. Any final thoughts, mate?
It's interesting that 10-point gap with Spurs, because I would argue that with a fully fit Nick Pope and Joe Willock all this season, and again, I know this is hypothetical, this is not how football works, but ultimately, if that had been the case, we'd have been on 10 more points, you know, mate, I don't doubt it. The combination of those two players in the team, the impact that have on how we play, I think would have brought with 10 more points, and that would mean we're having a completely different conversation. So I think it again kind of highlights, despite the fact that we have been, you know, we have questioned how and how we've adapted to injuries, ultimately, you know, you said two cup quarterfinals, a madness of a Champions League group, a genuine madness of a Champions League group, all these mad injuries, yet we're still sat here now talking about finishing potentially sixth in the table. That in itself is a heck of an achievement. I think it is testament, regardless of what criticisms we might have made of how other people might have made of how, it's still testament to what ultimately a very good job he has done, and in my opinion, still is doing. And I think the Liverpool point is really important as well, because, you know, you mentioned that momentum that they carried into the summer transfer window, and they brought in very effective players. McAllister, Szoboszlai, okay, Szoboszlai's been injured, but he's a good sign. And what they've also got is, they've got players who they previously bought in a couple of windows, settling in. Nunez starting to come into form, for example. We've kind of got a player like Tonali, a player like Barnes, who, you know, next season, that might be the kind of... They've had their bedding in season. Okay, Tonali hasn't played much because of what's happened. But, I mean, he's bedded into the culture of the club. He's bedded into a new country, much like Nunez. And we might see those kind of players really stepping up as well. So I think it is vitally important that we have this really strong end to the season, because I think it'll have a massive impact on my summer transfer window and next season. And who knows, mate? Will we be challenging for the title next season? Unlikely. But can we be challenging for that top four again if we take that momentum through? Absolutely we can. So really important we get a good result at Chelsea, I think, to keep this good feeling going, this momentum going. And Chelsea are beatable, because ultimately, you're looking at a team, Chelsea, whose players don't believe in what Pochettino is doing. They don't believe in it. It's quite obvious. And I think they're one result away from a sacking. And sometimes players do kind of down tools when they're not keen on a manager anymore. And I don't think you're going to get a hyper-intensive Chelsea on Monday. They're there for the taking, mate. Beat them, and who knows, we'll be having this conversation on steroids next week.
Yeah, fancy that, mate. Let me know. I'll let you sort that bit out for it. Thank you very much, pal. Been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks to everyone for listening and watching. Like I said, if you like this show, Norman and I do it monthly. We also do other shows as well. Please come and join us on our Patreon. Keeps this podcast and whole thing going. The free pod will be back Monday night. Charlotte Tsai and other podcasters will hopefully be coming into your ears and screens with a positive result and performance from that one. Speak to you all very soon. Bye-bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.